And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, food justice, fair trade, recipes, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sitarani Brian.
And today's show is about sustainable empowerment, from microlending and fair trade to Heifer International. There are hundreds and hundreds of projects and initiatives and organizations that are doing critical work every day to make sure environmental and social justice is part of our daily business practices and the way we engage with other communities around the world. We have some truly inspiring guests with us today. All that and much, much more today on An Organic Conversation.
Yeah, Helge, you know, we often talk about organic, which covers, you know, environmental stewardship and many other aspects of growing food, but the USDA organic program does not cover social justice or any aspects or any concerns around that. And that's why I think projects like the Heifer Project and Delicious Peace Coffee play such an important role in this conversation.
Their stories are so amazing. They're going to change your buying habits just the way that they change mine. And I'm really excited for those of you that might be learning about fair trade for the first time today, because it's such a positive and powerful change that you can affect every single day and with every single dollar that you spend.
Yeah, so true, Sita. Very, very, very true. I'm really looking forward to this topic. But first, let's hear the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. In 2007, Google committed to being a carbon-neutral business, which means prioritizing the reduction of emissions from their operations and purchasing renewable energy. The source Google uses to offset their emissions is as close to the ground as you can imagine. Pigs. Google has invested in a North Carolina project which collects the methane from the waste of 9,000 hogs. A power plant burns the methane to create power for the equivalent of about 35 homes a year. Harnessing agricultural animals' methane may be the most positive carbon offset decision. It prevents it from filtering into the atmosphere, thus reducing greenhouse gas emissions and preventing global warming, and collects energy for human use. Leaders from the Muslim world will be hosted by the UK's Under Secretary of State for the Department of Energy and Climate Change to launch the first worldwide guide to a greener Hajj. In 2010, around 2 million foreign visitors traveled to Saudi Arabia for the Hajj, a doubling since the mid-1990s. To make this annual pilgrimage to Mecca be more green, initiatives such as a high-speed train are just one of the infrastructural projects to help ensure the annual pilgrimage has a lower ecological footprint. Also in Qatar, a design committee has been formed to review a few dozen designs for new mosques aimed to reduce water consumption and energy usage. Where to go to college is still a difficult decision, and food takes a growing part in selecting a university. The Huffington Post reports on a new survey of the 10 college towns with the best food, from delicious barbecue in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, to fresh fish in Princeton, New Jersey. Universities are discovering that the quality of cafeteria cuisine is becoming more and more important for students and has an increasing impact on the decision where they go to college. As a result, student cafeterias across the country have been gearing up to offer fresher, more delicious, sustainably sourced, and organic meal and snack options to students, and widely feature their improved cuisine as part of their university welcome packages. Those are your green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thanks, Jen. Yes, universities are finally jumping on the organic and yummy bandwagon.
Yeah, my nephew Merrick goes to Princeton, and we were talking about that, and he said that many students now consider that just as important as many of the other aspects you'd look at for in a college when you're looking for a college. And Stanford and Princeton and Yale and Harvard are all competing with, you know, with food, basically.
Of course, yes, and grades and food, nutrition, and I mean, it's the whole world, ecology, sustainability, everything you study, it's all connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess they're not just interested in soft serve and soft baked chocolate chip cookies anymore. That's all we cared about when I was a student.
Well, they may still want that, but they want both, right? Now, you got to applaud that.
That's so 2010. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Brian.
And we'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview with Ben Corey Moran, the president of Thanksgiving Coffee, a coffee company with a very interesting and inspirational story about the incredible work in Africa and how they have benefited right back only here on An Organic Conversation. Stay tuned.
professional guitar. I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War. I'm going to Graceland, Graceland, to Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to Graceland.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
And Sitarani Brian.
And today's show is about sustainable empowerment. We basically have two choices. Our business practices and buying habits can deplete natural resources, endanger wildlife and species, and disrupt and impoverish communities. Or they can let other communities flourish. And in the process, we are receiving the gift of sustainable empowerment right back. We're excited about our guests today and about the topic. Our first caller is Ben Corey Moran, president of the Thanksgiving Coffee Company, calling in from Fort Bragg, California. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Helga.
Thanks for making the time. It's such an important topic in the time of business, in this time on this planet, to expand the conversation from environmental stewardship and environmental justice to more and more include social justice too. And we stumbled across your story with Thanksgiving Coffee and your amazing work in Africa through a movie that's called Delicious Peace Grows, where your company is part of, and actually you are in the movie as well. Tell us about the story that inspired Delicious Peace Grows.
Well, the story that's told in the film, Delicious Peace Grows in a Ugandan Coffee Bean, is the story of an interfaith cooperative in Uganda comprised of Jewish, Christian, and Muslim coffee farmers. And it's a story of their struggle to build a sustainable coffee-producing business in their community. They've been farmers for generations, and they've been struggling for generations. But the film tells the story of an effort that began around 2001, at a time when we know faith-based conflict, religious-inspired conflict is rampant in the world, and a time when coffee prices and coffee farmers were really in a tough spot. And the film tells the story of how these farmers came together to build peace, to build a better market for their products, and to sustain their families. And then it tells the story of how our small family-run company here in Northern California has partnered with them to help build that business over time.
And Ben, I watched the movie and I was intrigued with the story of JJ and how his neighbors weren't really quite sure, who, you know, what he was up to when he was trying to create this cooperative for peace.
Who was JJ, Mark, in the movie? JJ is the
main character who started the cooperative.
Great.
Right, right. Yeah, there's a long history that really runs back for generations of mistrust and even violence among the communities. JJ Keki is a leader in the Abu Yudaya Jewish community. They're a very small Jewish community in Uganda. They count less than 1,000 members as part of their community. They live next to and surrounded by and meshed with Muslim and Christian neighbors. But there's a history of mistrust and, like I said, a history of violence, especially in the 1970s during the reign of Idi Amin, which is a really brutal time, and faith-based and tribal lines of division were really used to manipulate people and a lot of violence in these communities at that time. And so, you know, 20 years later, the legacy, the scars of that legacy lived on, and JJ really had to build a new kind of trust with his neighbors so that they could come together and solve a problem they were all facing, which was poverty and the destruction of the environment caused by poverty and resulting from the terrible prices they were getting for coffee. They needed to find a better market for their coffee.
And it's truly remarkable when we hear that in stories such as yours, how poverty and war or poverty and conflict are not just related, but really interconnected, a part of each other, one without the other. Once you relieve one, the other one will follow if you can address one of the two. They're so associated and related that
absolutely
one usually follows the other.
Absolutely. And I would add, actually, that that destruction of the environment and pressure on natural resources and the real depletion of natural resources is an intimately connected component as well.
We're talking with Ben Corey Moran, the president of Thanksgiving Coffee today, a coffee company calling in from Fort Bragg, California, as we are just exploring and discovering the stories behind leadership far beyond environmental leadership and stewardship into the social justice and fair trade aspect. Ben, how did that story of that sustainable, you know, peace-based coffee cooperative reach you with Thanksgiving Coffee? You were not founded on that story. Thanksgiving Coffee existed before with a strong commitment to environmental stewardship.
Right, right. Well, yeah, this is the exciting part, because this is the part of the story where this really crucial work, this really important work, this much needed work is actually something that we can engage with on a daily basis here in the United States or in any country that consumes products from afar. Thanksgiving Coffee is nearly 40 years old. We've been working directly with family farmers and their cooperatives for decades, but we never had seen peace, the issue of peace, as really one of our central requirements and really one of our central targets. We focused on environmental sustainability. We focused on social justice and equity and trade, and really building a viable coffee trade that supports farmers to produce really delicious coffee that enables us to source some of the best coffees in the world, and then in return offers great prices back to those farmers directly, and creating a kind of a real win-win in the trading relationship for us, for the farmers, for our customers.
You know,
but the issue of peace is really new to us, and we realized through meeting the cooperative in Uganda and through meeting JJ, thanks to an organization called Kulanu based in New York City. They're an amazing organization that's worked with JJ's Jewish community for over a decade. We were introduced to JJ and this cooperative, and offered a chance to support them and engage with them. And because of our history of working with cooperatives and farmers, we were really ready for that. We were really ready to take that opportunity and run with it and build something beautiful together.
Yeah, I remember Paul Katzeff, the owner, talking, saying that it was a defining moment in his life when he got offered this coffee, that he just had to buy it.
Yeah, Paul and all of us really feel like, you know, in a lot of ways we were practicing, we were building our skills, building our knowledge base, building our ability to take something like this and really be the right partner for a community that needed it so much.
Ben, what was the situation of the community before the fair trade agreements were put in place and before the movie was made?
Well, I mean, there are really two backdrops. One is the backdrop of conflict amongst the communities, and the other is the backdrop of poverty. I think I've mentioned the history of conflict. And in terms of coffee, these farmers are very small-scale family farmers. They have been producing coffee for generations, but they've been poor for generations, really as a result of the coffee and the terrible prices they were getting. They were selling their coffee to buyers in the nearby city of Mbale, basically to the local market, who were selling the coffee on to intermediaries, who were selling the coffee on to large corporations, who were then exporting the coffee. And as a result of that, the farmers were at the very bottom of the value chain. They were really not selling on quality. They were selling basically to the demand of the buyer. The buyer was dictating the price. The farmer took it and left. And what changed was this development of this cooperative and the ability to pool their coffee together to reach a quantity that could be exported, to engage with all of the detailed logistics, export licensing and fees involved in exporting that coffee, to engage in the needs of quality improvement, to actually offer a quality product to a buyer far away, and then to go on and find that buyer and start to build that direct trading relationship. Really very closely resembling the dynamics of the farmer's market, or the CSA that you'd see here more locally, where the consumer and the producer are coming together directly.
Yeah, so that collaboration, it's changed things a lot. What's the community like down there now?
Well, it's amazing to return year after year and to see the changes in people's lives. There are some very tangible, visible changes in terms of the way people have improved their homes, and there's running water where there wasn't. There are solar panels providing electricity in homes that had no electricity before. Everyone has mosquito nets to sleep under to protect themselves against malaria, and a whole host of just really heartwarming, beautiful community-based improvements in the quality of life. You see it in schools. You see it in clinics and in the community. Like I said, you see it in pharmacists' homes individually. But the real core change that you see is a change in perspective about what the future looks like, because there's a real sense that this is now just the beginning, that they have traction, and that through their cooperative, these farmers coming from such diverse backgrounds have the ability to come together and solve the problems facing them. And that spirit of collaboration, that spirit of cooperativism, and the hope, and also now the knowledge and skills and capacity that they've built to pursue that are really amazing to see.
Ben Corey Moran, the president of Thanksgiving Coffee Company, talking about how his company, by buying from that small coffee co-op in Africa, in Uganda, helped really lay the tracks for a more prosperous and peaceful future for the coffee farmers in that collaborative, and receiving back by doing so. Ben, you talked about what happened before, what happened, and then what has the changes been. How is the role of faith, which seemed to be, you know, one of the original ideas to create a faith between or peace between interfaith groups, how has that been transformed further? How is that expressed and celebrated now? It's remarkable that there's a co-op around coffee, you know, working together between Muslims, Christians, and Jews, by an American company that, you know, helped lay the tracks. How is that now celebrated and upheld?
Right. Well, you know, there are a couple answers, but one, the farmers trust, these people trust each other now. They have some experience working side by side together, and they see that there's more to be gained by working together than there is to fighting for what little there is. So there's trust. That's an everyday kind of trust. These farmers have woven together their livelihoods and are sharing in the prosperity that they're building. But beyond that, that's enabled conversations about faith and about difference, and also about similarity. And farmers have discovered things that they share that they didn't know about before. And similarly, in the United States, we've worked with a network of Jewish and Christian and Muslim communities, synagogues, churches, and mosques, and helped bring people together here around this story, informed by what really is a shared value across all of the world's faith, which is the value of justice, the value of fairness in relationship, the value of what we're talking about when we talk about, you know, being an informed consumer, taking responsibility for the impact of your actions, informing yourself with knowledge, and empowering yourself with conscious and right decisions. And so there's this beautiful echo that's both being heard in Uganda and then now in the United States as well. And we're together learning about empowerment and how we can empower ourselves to engage with some of the deeper values that we all share and so many of us hold so deeply.
Yes, beautiful. Ben Corey Moran, again, the president of the Thanksgiving Coffee Company, and that website is thanksgivingcoffee.com, about the incredible work in Uganda, Africa, working with a small coffee cooperative there, and really as an interfaith project, peace project, now to relative economic prosperity and lots of hope and a better infrastructure for everyone. Thank you, Ben, so much for joining us. We'll have you back on the show, I think we can say that already, to keep an eye on that development. Beautiful work.
Thank you, Helge.
Thanks for joining us today. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryan.
And today's show is about sustainable empowerment, how our choices and buying habits can actually empower communities here locally or all the way around the globe. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with another exciting guest today on An Organic Conversation. Stay tuned.
We all have pain, we all have sorrow. My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, T-R-A-C-E-S-F.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Over 25 years ago, my husband and I started a business around our passion for ginger. We called it the Ginger People. Today, you can find our products at natural food stores nationwide. We love ginger. It's what we do. And the more we learned about the amazing properties of ginger, the more we realized that everyone benefits from eating ginger every day. My name is Abby Leeson, and I am with the Ginger People. To learn more about our products, the goodness of ginger, and how it can improve your health, visit gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryan.
And today's show is about sustainable empowerment. We have a fantastic guest lined up, actually no less but the president of Heifer International. But before we dive into that interview, talking about how our buying habits and choices can create a better world for all, here's Mark Mulcahy with What's in Season.
And what's in season today is it's actually the official start of the national apple season. Now, if you're on the East Coast, you've probably seen a little bit of, you know, early Max or something already. Or if you're on the West Coast, you would have seen some Gravensteins and stuff like that. But officially, when they really start shipping major shipments of apples across the country, this is when it starts, right about now. And galas are usually and are the first apple that you're going to be seeing in the stores of the fresh new crop of U.S. apples. You've been seeing apples this summer that have come from New Zealand and Chile and places like that. But this is when the first U.S. apples start coming back into season, and so you're eating a good, fresh Washington apple. Now, gala, which you may remember, I remember when it actually came on the market back in the 80s, and it was this phenomenal cross between a Gold Delicious and a Kid's Orange Red, which many of us don't even know what that apple is, but I did know that I loved it, and it was a brand new taste, and I'm sure if gala lovers out there really know what that means. It's a great apple for eating fresh. It's a really good baking apple. They actually consider it a dessert apple. And when you're looking for them in the store, you know, you want to have a firm, smooth skin, and you want to make sure that you test its firmness by holding the apple in the palm of your hand. You don't want to push it with your thumbs because that's how you get those some of those bruises that you see. And it should feel solid and heavy, not soft and light. My other little tip about choosing apples is to take your forefinger and hold it against your thumb and then flick the apple. And when you flick your finger against the apple, it should have like a high-pitched tone as opposed to a dull tone. And then you'll know if that apple's firm or if it's starting to lose some of its pressure. It's a foolproof way to pick out a good crisp apple. So you should try that at home. One thing about apples, Gala apples especially, is you want to keep them in the refrigerator if you're not going to eat them right away. And another thing you should remember is apples don't freeze at normal freezing temperatures. They freeze at 28 degrees or 28 and a half degrees. So they can actually be kept pretty cold. And the only key thing is when you put them in your fridge, you want to keep them away from your other vegetables because of ethylene gas. And for all of you who are looking for a unique way to use for a marriage proposal, in ancient Greece, they used to toss an apple to the girl that you loved as a traditional proposal for marriage. And if she caught it, then she accepted your marriage proposal. If she did not, well, you just had a bruised apple. That's what's in season for this week. And back to you, Helga.
Oh, my God. Oh, you know, I was going to say how much I love that little tip about picking an apple, but I just love that story, that proposal.
Yes.
I think I would have said yes if my husband would have thrown me an apple like that. I would have been like, this guy gets me. The apple is important.
That's right. He gets me. Right? He gets me. And you would have taken a bite.
What if you want it as a woman, but you can't catch at all?
Please try it again.
Walk it back to him.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Brian.
And today's show is about sustainable empowerment. We have two choices. Our business practice can either deplete and disrupt and impoverish communities, or they can let other communities flourish. And in the process, we are receiving a gift of sustainable empowerment right back. We have exciting guests on the show today with us. We heard from Ben Corey Moran, the president of Thanksgiving Coffee, who called from Fort Bragg, California, who told us the story of Delicious Peace Grows, a Jewish, Christian, and Muslim Uganda coffee farmer cooperative, and how that fair trade coffee cooperative built a peace and economically prosperous community, peaceful and economically prosperous. And now with us, and that website actually is Delicious Peace, the movie, all one word, deliciouspeacethemovie.com. Again, for that movie, Delicious Peace, deliciouspeacethemovie.com. And you can also go to videoproject.com for more films around environmental and social stewardship, videoproject.com. And Thanksgiving Coffee, again, is thanksgivingcoffee.com. All that on our Facebook site as well, An Organic Conversation. With us now, calling in from Little Rock, Arkansas, is not the president, but the director of Heifer International, Heifer USA, Perry Jones. Perry, are you with us?
I am. Hi, good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us today. We are talking about sustainable empowerment, and we can't think of an organization who has longer and perhaps with the most impact made that the focus of their work. Heifer is synonymous with bringing direct hope in form of animals into other communities to give them, you know, the start basically on the idea, don't give them fish, but teach them how to fish. Can you tell us about the great work that Heifer has been engaged in since 1944?
Sure, you bet. Heifer, as you just mentioned, was founded in 1944 by Dan West, who, along with a group of fellow travelers, were in Spain during the Spanish Civil War, giving out bags of milk, and they were giving out the same bags of milk, giving out bags of milk to the same families day after day, and realized that there was no sustainability in that. You know, the refugee families from the war were no closer to being able to take care of themselves. Dan and his colleagues in Spain were farmers, and when they came back to the United States, they pulled a group of farmers together to give of their own herds animals that were then to be shipped overseas, and that's sort of how Heifer got it started. Still, today, Heifer is an international nonprofit community development organization whose mission has expanded to work with communities to end hunger and poverty and care for the earth, but it's still about working to promote self-reliance and long-term sustainability.
So I have to ask, that's quite a FedEx bill that you might have if you have to ship a cow somewhere. So do you actually send animals to other countries?
Well, sort of. Heifer last year assisted 191,000 families with the gifts of animals, training, and passing on the gift. However, we don't ship the animals overseas anymore. As you said, it's not very cost effective. And, you know, a Jersey cow from the grassy fields of Wisconsin doesn't do very well in the high Andean plateau of Bolivia, you know, but a llama does. And so we've tried for a number of reasons. It's much better for the local economy. And you have a much broader range of locally appropriate options when you buy the animal locally.
So how does that exactly work? Heifer started off in 1944 realizing that feeding milk every day is not the solution, but giving the families and the communities an opportunity to build an agro-business, or at least to feed themselves or their immediate families and community members, was really the way to go. Bringing small animals from chickens to cows to communities nearby. How has this work changed since 1944? What is Heifer really doing now? If you can dive into the gift catalog and what people can support, and how is that technically being done?
Sure, that's a great question. So as I mentioned a second ago, our work has always been about self-reliance, and it's been about social justice. It's evolved from going from it wasn't exactly FedExing, but we had seagoing cowboys, and we had animals being shipped over in boats and in cargo planes. And we've gone from there to buying animals locally, also evolved to understand that there was a great deal of capacity building needed for farmers, both to take care of their animals and for the animal to become part of a more integrated, sustainable farming system. Heifer's work has grown to focus a lot on women's empowerment, understanding that the key to long-term sustainability of our work often is trying to be very intentional in trying to work with women. The benefit really stays in the family when you try to target women and engage and empower them. And then over the last several decades, the environmental piece has become another one of the main pistons of Heifer's work. More recently, and I think this ties in very nicely to your show about, you know, sustainable business practices, our work has become about economic development and social entrepreneurism. So what we do now in terms of, just to get a sense of how Heifer works, is we work to organize communities. That includes both farmers and other stakeholders, you know, that can add value in the community and provide training in sustainable agriculture and entrepreneurial skills. And then we work with the community and with others to provide access to fair markets and provide access to credit and capital.
We're talking with Perry Jones, the director of Heifer USA, about the critical and peacemaking work of creating environmental and economic stewardship and opportunities in countries around the world.
Perry, it's interesting that you mentioned the Jersey cows don't necessarily do well overseas, and that you guys have helped 191,000 families. That's a lot of communities. Like, what is the impact of your work? How many communities have you changed all over the world?
The number that I quoted you was last year, the number of families that we were working with in active projects. Since 1944, Heifer has helped an estimated 70 million people in more than 125 countries. So it's just absolutely mind-blowingly enormous, the effort that Heifer and its network of on-the-ground partners have been able to do. Our work has been independently evaluated and with strikingly positive results. When we evaluate our work, to speak a minute to the impact, they evaluate it at the direct material level, you know, such as the acquisition of assets and home improvements, et cetera. And then the deeper level changes, sort of the personal transformation also that has to happen when you're doing long-term human and community development, changes in behaviors, values, knowledge, attitudes, compassion, you know, among the community. And then higher level changes, such as influencing changes in policy and practices of other local and national organizations, local government, et cetera. And I think one of the main facets of our work that are key to our impact and the expansion of our impact is the passing on of the gift. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but for any of your listeners who may not be, this is the passing on the gift is where any family or individual that receives anything through any of Heifer's projects, be them material or training otherwise, have to pass this on to another family, which not only serves to multiply the impact of the programming, but it also turns every recipient into a donor. That's enormous in terms of dignity.
Yes, and we do want to hear about exactly how people can contribute and what happens to that money and to that contribution right when we come back after the break. Please stay with us, Perry. It's fascinating. Your work is phenomenal. Perry Jones, the director of Heifer USA, talking about the Heifer Project and all the great work that has been done in 125 countries around the world today on sustainable empowerment here on An Organic Conversation. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one. And I believe it could be someday it's going to come. Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country. Come take me home again.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, my name is Abby Leeson, and I am the co-founder of The Ginger People. You can find our products in natural food stores near you. From delicious ginger drinks, sauces, spreads, ginger chews, baked goods, to skincare products. We love ginger. It's what we do. Add the benefits of ginger to your life, and you get that little kick, too. I am Abby Leeson, and I'm with The Ginger People. For inspiration around ginger, go to gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, trace-sf.com, or call 415-817-7836.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryan.
And today's show is about sustainable empowerment. We heard about great projects so far in An Organic Conversation today about how our buying habits, our business practices can really change communities all the way around the globe. On the phone with us still is Perry Jones, the director of Heifer USA, about the fantastic work that half a USA and half international have done since 1944.
Perry, you started telling us about how the gift giving works. I'm curious, if somebody goes to heifer.org and can look at animals and how they give it, can you tell us how you can give animals? And also, is that only over the seas, or could you do it to small farms and individuals and families in the U.S.?
Absolutely. I'd be glad to speak to that. So each purchase of a gift animal, whether you go to Heifer's website, or I'm sure several listeners get Heifer's gift catalog each year, is a symbolic donation and represents a donation to the entire mission of Heifer. The donations are used where they're needed most, including, as you just asked, right here at home in the U.S. to help struggling people feed themselves and live productive, dignified lives and care for the earth. In terms of what you can do here, that's a great question. And it really, in the United States, I've worked in Heifer most of my time, and Heifer has been spent overseas, especially in Latin America. But after coming to the U.S. program, I just see tremendous, tremendous opportunities coming back after having been gone a few years for how to get involved in the United States. If you're interested in supporting Heifer, you know, obviously go to heifer.org to be a part of the incredible work and learn about the incredible work that Heifer is doing around the world. And go to the Heifer catalog, you know, this year, and give your kids or parents or spouse a gift that's meaningful and help somebody help themselves, either right in your own backyard or around the world. What you can do in the United States, and I would love to hear more on your thoughts on this too, because I know that this is what today's show is about and generally what your show is about, but you can eat local, sustainably produced food, you know, more organic food. That's going to drive production practices, and that way it's going to provide markets for the small producers that are very almost desperately in need of markets to transition their practices and to support themselves. You can support getting local, sustainably produced food into your school, into your local school, you know, and finally, I would say you can grow your own backyard garden if you want to be a part of the movement.
But we do vote with our dollar every day. Yes, Cedar, yeah, do you have a follow-up question?
I think that that's so terrific that we can use this here at home, especially with the news coming out about poverty levels being the highest they've been in 50 years. Exactly. Yeah, so
in the news it said 40, I believe the latest census data said that 46 million Americans are now living in poverty. And just so you know, another very important plug that I'd like to make here that I think will resonate with a lot of your listeners is that Heifer International, through Heifer USA, just launched an initiative called the Seeds of Change Initiative. It's a new multi-year, multi-million-dollar grant and technical assistance initiative that builds on the emerging local foods movement to foster economic development and improve access to nutritious, locally produced food among food insecure populations, especially in the Delta, the Mississippi River Delta, and in central Appalachia, places where, you know, I know that in California, you might say the movement is just getting started, and I hope that is indeed the case. But in places like the Mississippi Delta and Appalachia, it really hasn't even gotten a foothold yet. And so we're trying to bring that local food movement that you all are just at the heart of in San Francisco to places like the Delta and central Appalachia. It's enormously exciting.
So Perry, how does someone become a recipient of your great work?
That's a great question. If you're abroad, you go and see your local Heifer country office. If you're here in the United States, you can go to heifer.org/USA for information on how your group might partner with Heifer.
And so someone who actually needed a chicken or a goat or a llama or something would actually just go into your office abroad or just go onto your website and apply to receive something like this?
Well, not exactly, because Heifer doesn't really give out animals. Heifer does long-term sustainable development. You know, so if you go into the office winning a chicken, you better be prepared to stay a while because sustainable development, regional economic development takes decades, not hours. Mm-hmm. And so Heifer sort of uses the animal, the beauty of our model is it uses the animal as sort of an entryway to do much more complex and sustainable development.
We're talking with Perry Jones, the director of Heifer USA, about the great work here locally, domestically, and internationally since 1944, rather than donating money, donating animals in this case for community empowerment.
Perry, you're absolutely right. This is exactly what we like to talk about in this show and what our listeners are interested in. Can you tell us how we can get involved? How can people help support the work that you do?
Absolutely. As I mentioned a moment ago, and I'd like to speak to that again, I think the gift catalog is one of the most amazing things that people in this country can do, and through Heifer, to support Heifer's work. All of our families and our friends have got houses that are overflowing with things, most of which are not made in our communities and don't add value, to our communities or to the lives of the recipients. And the idea and Heifer's success so far in raising financial resources for our work has been that folks try to do something meaningful. They try to teach their kids by leading by example. So instead of a new, and I don't want to speak against any particular product, but a new plastic or electronic widget, do something that shows what you're made of. Do something that is an extension of your values, especially to your friends and family.
Yes.
And by giving a gift through the Heifer catalog, you're helping somebody help themselves. And then, as I mentioned before, with the passing on of the gift, it's really an incredible investment, even, because it's the gift that literally keeps on giving.
Absolutely. And Perry, I can hear the enthusiasm you have for your work. And what I was wondering is, what are you excited about for the future?
Well, one of the most immediate things that I'm excited about is that it is under 100 degrees in Little Rock this afternoon. It's very nice. And it may rain today. But as you all know, the headlines are absolutely daunting. The rise in poverty, as we mentioned a moment ago, and food insecurity, which we haven't talked about, but I could go on for a long time about that here and around the world, are enough to break your heart and obviously to completely overwhelm you. However, I personally believe that in every catastrophe and crisis, there is also tremendous opportunity. And I hope that out of the eventual ashes of the current financial crisis and the food crisis and the current agricultural practices, we learn to think beyond the next quarterly profit statement to the next generation. And I think a lot of people, and your listeners are a heavy concentration of those people. That's one of the reasons I'm so excited to be on here today, because I really feel like I'm speaking with the choir here. But I think a lot of people are more and more concerned about the world that we're leaving for our children. That's exciting. And I think the local food movement and sustainable agriculture and organic agriculture are growing like crazy in this country and also around the world. We've seen the damage of the financial and agricultural systems that don't work. And now sort of the call to arms is, let's work together to build one that does.
Yes, and the symbol for crisis is also the symbol for opportunity. And that was Perry Jones, the director of Heifer USA. Perry, thanks so much for joining us today, for making the time, and stay cool in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thanks. Fantastic work. Heifer USA. Check out the website, HEIFER, just like a new little cow, Heifer USA or heifer.org. If you want to gift the gift of giving, we want to gift the gift of a live animal to local rural communities here in the U.S. or anywhere across the planet. Heifer is a great, great resource for you. And that almost concludes Sustainable Empowerment and Organic Conversation today. But we have a couple of wonderful things coming up still. Here's one of them. Here's Chef Sita with Your Holistic Bite.
Thanks, Alga. Few things tell you that it is time for fall, like the smell of apples, right? That crisp, sweet aroma makes you think of football in your backyard and on your television screen. It makes you think of damp leaves and jumping into piles of leaves. And it makes us think of our favorite fall season, which is Thanksgiving, just around the corner. So in preparation for this sweet season, which is probably a favorite of a lot of yours out there, I know it's my favorite, you should get a jump start on some sweet, simple, seasonal staples like apple butter. That's what I'm talking about today, apple butter. And if you've only ever purchased apple butter from the store, then the time has come for you to make your own batch. It is so easy to do. It really just takes some occasional stirring and an afternoon or an evening free. And I'll tell you, the couple hours that it spends on the stove, you're just going to be sitting and basking in the glory of how delicious your entire home smells. So start with about 4 pounds of apples, and that's about 8 medium apples. It's a really good tip for you guys when you're thinking about the weight of apples. One apple tends to weigh about a half pound. So 8 apples for about 4 pounds of apples, and then juice a couple apples to get half a cup of juice. So there's some liquid to get it going. Add a tablespoon of lemon juice and half a cup of sweetener. I like to use maple syrup or ginger syrup if you're in the mood for something a little bit spicy. And then you simmer it for about 10 minutes, transfer it to a food processor, puree it so that it's nice and smooth, put it back into your saucepan, and cook it on low over about 2 hours time, just going and stirring it regularly. Partially cover that so that if, you know, it's nice and thick, it might splatter a little bit. You don't want to get it all over your kitchen. So keep it a little bit covered and stir it occasionally. And it, as it reduces, it's going to get this gorgeous deep caramel color. And in the last half an hour of cooking, you can add more spices if you want. You can add a teaspoon of cinnamon. You could do some ginger, some orange peel, nutmeg, whatever inspires you, or maybe something different every week when you make it. So I think that Gala apples with their firm texture are really nice for making apple butter because they don't give off too much juice in that process, so it doesn't take too long to cook all of it off. And it's so versatile. It has a really mild, pleasant apple flavor. You can use it on a lot of different things. You can put it on your breakfast breads like toast and waffles. You can spread it on a sandwich that you use with some soft cheeses and some tender greens. Or you can use it in a sauce or a glaze if you want to add some butter and white wine and aromatics and put it over your protein at dinner. So apples are also great on the digestive system. They're very soothing. And they're high in a phytonutrient known as quercetin, which is an antioxidant and anti-inflammatory, and that also helps to reduce the buildup of plaque in your arteries. So the bulk of quercetin is located in the peel. If you're going to peel your apples before you use them, hold on to those peels and either juice them or throw them in your smoothies. Make use of all the bits and get all that delicious fall flavor out of your Gala apples.
And that was the Holistic Bite with Chef Sita. Baby, hold on to me, set the skin. Yes, today's show, Sustainable Empowerment from Microlending and Fair Trade to Heifer International. There are hundreds of projects and initiatives and organizations that are doing critical work every day to make sure environmental and social justice is part of our business practice and part of the way we engage with other communities here domestically and around the world. We had some great guests on the show, and all those resources are on An Organic Conversation Facebook. Just go to Facebook and you can find us, An Organic Conversation. And also there, if you like to comment, you can either comment right there on Facebook or send us a message there, or you can send us any kind of comment or feedback to share at anorganicconversation.com. And we love to listen to you. This is the time right now to listen to you as Mark, what is going on, Mark?
I was just excited about it.
This is the mailbag coming. So if you have any comments or questions or concerns or suggestions, email us to share@anorganicconversation.com. And that brings us right to the mailbag. Mark, what do we have today?
Well, we heard from Jessica. And she says she tunes into our shows most weeks and loves it. And she was wondering if we ever took tips on shows, and because she found a great article on this thing, on this project called Stockbox, which provides used shipping containers and makes and has them as stores in parking lots or in different communities that don't have stores, so people can come shop there in where we have these food deserts. And we just did a show on food deserts, as you know, where we covered Wholesome Wave and we covered Mogro and the food truck. And the stock box is a really great idea, Jessica. Thank you for sending it our way. And we do listen to our listeners' ideas for shows. We go over them all the time. Where Stockbox is now is they are in the prototype phase.
How does it work exactly again?
What they do is they take recycled shipping containers. You know those big shipping containers you see on boats going through the bay all time?
Yes,
huge things. And they take recycled shipping containers. And the idea, because it's still in the prototype phase, is to take them and put them in like parking lots of stores and things in areas that don't have fresh food supermarkets.
To have mobile store units.
But it would stay there. But what they would do is they would restock it, and then they would just open it up at certain times during the week. And let you know people come shop there. So it's a great idea, but it hasn't fully come to fruition yet. They're looking; it'll start up in Seattle.
We'll keep an eye on that. But as you said, we had a show on irrigating food deserts with some other really innovative and creative ideas just a few weeks back. If you look it up, irrigating food deserts, beautiful show. And yeah, keep sending it. share@anorganicconversation.com.
So I think we still have a couple more minutes. Helga, you got an organic moment for us?
I do, yes. Helga's organic moment. Over the next years, the deeper we dig in the world of sustainability, the more we will discover universes of interconnectedness. Take the word exudate, for example. One of the many ingenious ways nature is connected. In this case, quite astonishing. It happens every time a cow licks its nose. The cow's nose is a landing pad for beneficial aerial bacteria, and the cow's tongue serves as the carrying tool, transferring this beneficial bacteria from the air onto the grass the cow is grazing on, and from there down the grass into the soil. With every lick of its nose, the cow places a small amount of healthy microbial life onto the grass, and by doing so ensures that the quality and health of its own food supply is maintained and guaranteed in the future. How's that for self-sufficiency?
I love that. When you don't interfere with nature, man, she has got everything worked out.
Just let her do it. Yes.
I love it. Well, that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer is Kristen Ponger. Production assistants are Lauren Mulcahy and Vanessa Farron. If you missed parts of this show or for any other resources, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com, or again, you can find us on An Organic Conversation Facebook. We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And Sitarani Bryan.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye-bye now. Take a load off Benny. Take a load for free. Take a load off Benny. And you put the load right on me. I picked up my bag. I went looking for a place to hide. I saw Carmen and the devil walking side by side. I said, hey, Carmen, come on, let's go downtown. She said, I gotta go, but my friend can stick around. Take a load off. Moses, there's nothing you can say. It's just old Luke, and Luke's waiting on a judgment day. Well, Luke, my friend, what about young Annalee? He said, do me a favor, son, won't you stay and keep Annalee company? Take a load off.